We now have a quorum, so I'll call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. We can leave it up there. Attorney General's running a little late, like I think everybody else this morning with the wonderful traffic we have. So we'll take the bill up first, seeing as how Representative Sundin is here. So Representative Sundin, I'll move House File 129, and it goes to... refer to Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be sent to the General Register. Representative Sundin, if you want to introduce yourself and explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mike Sundin. House File 129, House Research Overview reads something like this. This bill authorizes the public members of the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities to receive per diem compensation and reimbursement for certain expenses. The law authorizing the payments provides for a $55 per day per diem on days spent on council activities, expenses, and reimbursements, including child care expenses when authorized by the council. Among other activities, the council is directed by law to oversee certain state responsibilities related to persons with developmental disabilities required by the Federal Developmental Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights Act 2002. So it's a very very short language change in section 16B 0.054, and on 1.13 of the bill, it reads, public members of the council shall be compensated and reimbursed for expenses as provided in section 15059, subdivision 3. People that serve on this board, it's a labor of love for them, and the least we can do is reimburse them properly for their time spent and expenses, including child care or the care of a disabled family member. All these monies are, in fact, reimbursed through the federal government, so there's actually no financial transaction or no financial burden to the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Sundin, this the bill, this there's going to be a cost to this, and that's why we're sending it back to, and that's why it's here, and that's why we're sending it back. And I see we have an amendment. Where does this money come from that's going to be paying for these expenses?
Well, this actually comes out of statute 15059, as I just mentioned. The compensation is prescribed by the federal government, and each council and committee under section C of that statute, each council and committee must adopt internal standards prescribing what constitutes a day spent on council or committee activities or purposes of making daily payments under this subdivision. So it's pretty well delineated on how this is paid out and under what circumstances.
I guess that's not the question. I thought Ms. Hell, Ms. Roberts, where does this money come from? Is it going to be out of the general fund, or where does this money come from to pay for this?
Mr. Chair members, no, it comes from existing federal grant funds. This Disability Council receives approximately $1 million per year in federal funds, and you can see that explained on page 2 of the fiscal note under the expenditure and revenue formula. It states that the cost will be absorbed in the federal grant.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Mm-hmm. And I see we have an amendment. Representative Albright, your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. Dealing with Health and Human Services for a number of years, the Development Disabilities Council is, they just do yeoman's work. They take care of the most vulnerable amongst us. It's probably one of the great opportunities for us to exhibit what people elect us to do, is take care of the most vulnerable amongst us. And so, Representative Sundin, I hope you'll receive this amendment as friendly. This money is intended to refund or respond to the need for people to get where they need to go, to provide for their expenses as they sit on this council. I think it's incumbent upon us to provide for this. The money wouldn't go anywhere else, and so I think that this is wholly acceptable to make sure that they get this money up front and not encumber the matching funds from the federal government. They already need so much more for the disability community. I think it's wholly worthwhile for us to provide for the repayment of their expenses, not infringing on the matching grants from the federal government. So I hope you'll receive it as a friendly amendment.
So are you, Representative Albright, you're moving that amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would move the A1 amendment. Thank you.
And Chair, what's your take on the amendment, and would you support it or?
I'm sorry, I'd urge against acceptance of the amendment. That just could actually complicate things, slow things down if we're following the path of reimbursement there rather than simply use what's in place here under the federal guidelines.
Representative Lippert. How are you? Well, Representative Long, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright, I'm just curious about this amendment, and it seems that if we have a federal appropriation for this money right now, I'm not understanding why we would need to replace that federal money with a state appropriation.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. And I'm going to draw upon Ms. Roberts to explain what those federal funds are used for, the purposes. If she could just give a little alliteration on that, if she knows.
Ms. Roberts, do we ever use federal or use general fund dollars to supplant federal dollars?
Mr. Chair, members, there's two questions there.
Chair, the point, and just to make the correction, the amendment does not deal with the supplanting of the federal dollars. It's to intentionally provide for that the federal dollars go exactly to the intention provided, and we're, in a sense, then by adopting the amendment, going towards facilitating the operational aspects of adjudicating and dispensing with those matching funds.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure I'm prepared to talk about the details of how the federal funding works. If there's someone here from the department that could talk about it, that might be more appropriate.
And Ms. Roberts, have we ever in the past, or do we ever use general fund dollars to, if there's federal money to spend?
Mr. Chair, I can only speak to my experience in this committee, and I'm not aware of any time we've done that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to come forward and give testimony to answer?
Additional.
Representative Long, is she?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Albright, it seems like we are at least breaking new ground in replacing federal money that is coming to the state with state money. The fiscal conservative in me would think that that's probably not the best use of state funds. If I were a cynic, I would think that the goal here is to try to get Democrats on the record voting against money for a notable state program, but I assume that's not your intent here.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This money is being spent for something right now. And for the disability community, they come into our committees on a regular basis asking for the crumbs. Whether you want to depict it as a supplanting of or a replacement for the federal dollars or not, we're not in this committee to impugn the intentions of anyone. I've dealt for 7 years with the disability community. This is nothing more than an opportunity to, I think, recognize that the disability needs our attention. This is an opportunity for us to make sure that the full force of that federal matching dollar goes to goes to the people that need it so desperately. And I don't think that it's out of purview for us to provide for the administration of those grants out of the general fund. So thank you.
And welcome to the committee, ma'am, and please say your name for the tape, and maybe you can enlighten us on where this money is being used and if it'd be better served taking it from the general fund or using the federal dollars you already have.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Lori Barkopensky. I'm the Director of Community Services. I oversee six areas in admin, including the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities. One of the first questions you asked is kind of the work of the council. They are required by federal law to do a number of activities or that advocate for individuals with developmental disabilities. They are world famous for the Partners in Policymaking program that many of you may have heard of. The majority of their funds goes to grants to local organizations to do work to advocate on behalf of people with developmental disabilities. But they try and raise awareness and advocate for policy that strengthens it. They, in addition to the federal funds they get a small amount of general fund right now as a match to their federal grants. Ms. Roberts will probably be able to give the exact number. I think it's $74,000 a year. They also receive general fund to do work to support the Olmsted Plan, which many of you may be familiar with. As we appreciate all of the support for the bill, while it's not our bill, it comes from the chair of our council, who is Senator Hoffman. We currently already have authority to pay expenses for our public members. This provides for that $55 a day per diem. And as our fiscal note stated, we are prepared to absorb those costs, but we do appreciate the sentiment of wanting to make sure that all the funds are able to be fully used.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Chair and members. I just want to say, you know, we can only spend a dollar once. And we always want to make sure that we use that dollar as prudently as possible. And I would like to ask you, just in full clarification, you were saying that you already have dollars allocated for these per diem expenses. And then if we want to then be able to benefit the disability community to the maximum, then it is better for us to hold the general fund dollars, the state general fund dollars, so that we can apply those to disability grants in other ways at a later date. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we currently pay the expenses, so transportation costs for our members out of our federal funds. This would allow us to pay them a $55 per diem, so kind of a payment
out of
just for their
federal
services.
Grant.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, excuse me.
It would allow, we could pay it from the existing state funds we have as well as the existing federal funds we have. The language of the bill isn't specific.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, the federal dollars that are coming in, could you just elaborate for us in terms of the type of programming that those dollars go towards? Because obviously, to the representative's point, you can only spend a dollar so once, right? And so to the point of the work that we are called to in terms of to provide and to protect the most vulnerable amongst us, while you can elaborate on what these dollars go towards, it is also important that we maximize those federal dollars, receiving general fund dollars to administer the program, I think is a worthy responsibility that we should be called to, so that we do maximize how we spend every dollar coming from the feds. But if you could just elaborate what the type, the programming that is in place and how we go about processing and dispersing those funds.
Ms. Kapinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, as I mentioned, we do a variety of outreach and advocacy work. One of them funds the Partners in Policymaking class, which teaches family members and self-advocates how to advocate for policy change and advocate for themselves throughout kind of government systems. We also do a lot of awareness activities. We have staff that work at the Department of Administration who also administer the grants according to state laws and policies. So we have a variety of activities that we provide, as well as supporting the Olmsted work, as I mentioned. So they do make them, I believe, they make the most of every dollar that they get. They are, you know, kind of an amazing force for positive change on behalf of the developmental disability community. So I really appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up then for the testifier.
Right, I'd like to get to a vote because we have the Attorney General waiting here for
Understood.
Us.
Understood. Understood. In your opinion, based upon the limited funds that you do have coming in, though, would we agree that rather than dipping into your account to the pay for the, for these funds, or to take away from the programming that is provided through the federal funds, that this would be a worthy opportunity to reach more people if we paid for the per diem out of the general fund by this appropriation.
Ms. Kopinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I'm not prepared to answer that. We support whatever, the governor has not yet released his budget. We support whatever's in the governor's budget. I would leave it to the will of the committee how you think it is best to fund this, but just know that there are currently state and federal funds that would be available to pay for it. But you are certainly the will of the committee of what you'd like to do and how you'd like to fund this.
Thank you.
Well, members, the amendment, A1 amendment, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is not approved. Now to the original bill. Any further questions on the bill? If not, Chair.
This Sundin? Is a good bill, Mr. Chair. I urge adoption.
All in favor of House File 129, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion's approved. Bill's referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With the recommendation to go to the General Register. And now we have Attorney General. And while he's coming down here, Representative Long, did you get a chance to read the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair, and I moved them.
Representative Long moves approval of the minutes from yesterday's meeting of February 5th. All approve, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
You had a fun driving like I did.
Interesting times we're living in.
My fellow classmate from 2002, so.
That's right.
Anyway. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I certainly welcome and I'm grateful for this opportunity to address the committee today. Thank you for inviting me here, and I'm honored that this is actually my second testimony in the House of Representatives since becoming Minnesota Attorney General. And I want to encourage you all to contact my office. I want to work with everyone to make sure that we are standing up for the rights of all Minnesotans, and particularly when it comes to constituent complaints, concerns about consumers, elders, criminal justice, and our state agencies. Look forward to working together. Let me first address what the Attorney General's office does. The Minnesota Constitution established the office of the Minnesota Attorney General to serve as the state's chief legal officer. The role and duties of the Attorney General arise from the Minnesota Constitution, state statutes, particularly Chapter 8, and case law that the courts have made. The Minnesota Attorney General has five basic duties. First and foremost, the Attorney General defends the laws of the legislature that have been legally enacted and help to ensure that they're upheld if challenged. You make the law, I enforce the law. Second, the Attorney General represents more than 100 state agencies, boards, and commissions. Third, the Attorney General also protects the people of Minnesota by bringing lawsuits on behalf of Minnesota residents as chief enforcer of the state's consumer protection and trust and charities laws. The Minnesota Statute Section 8.31, the legislature directed this Attorney General to investigate and prosecute, quote, violations of the law of this state respecting the unfair, discriminatory, and other unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade. And that's part of the job you've given me, and I promise to do it. Fourth, the Attorney General, and this is one that's particularly important to me, supports our county attorneys, especially ones from smaller counties in criminal justice-related matters. I've been in touch with our county attorneys across the state, and what they've told me is that they need a partnership with the Minnesota Attorney General's office. My policy is that there is no county too small or too far away from the metro not to get the help and benefit of the Attorney General's office. We plan to be there as a partner to our greater Minnesota counties and make sure that we have equal justice every inch of our state. And fifth and finally, the Attorney General serves as a member of the State Executive Council, the State Board of Investment, the Land Exchange Board, and the Board of Pardons. What I do as Attorney General, I view my job as representing the legislature in the state of Minnesota, supporting the law enforcement, and helping the people of the state afford their lives and live with dignity and respect. I believe that's the goal we all share, and when you come down to it, I believe helping people afford their lives and living with dignity and respect is why we're here. Now, here's how the office is organized. The Minnesota Attorney General's office currently has about 327 staff members. That includes 40% who are attorneys, 36% who are legal assistants, which includes investigators, our consumer phone room and mediator group, which just fields complaints from anyone who may want to call in and say they have a problem. That also includes financial analysts and others, and about 24% are support staff. The Office of the Attorney General is currently organized in 16 divisions, and I'll name all of them, but I won't go into detail on all of them. We can follow up if you have an interest. Let me start with the Administrative Law Division, which provides legal representation to many state agencies, among them administration, agriculture, employment, economic development, management and budget, natural resources, as well as Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, the Housing Finance Agency, the State Board of Investment, executive branch officials, and many other boards, agencies, councils, and commissions. This work includes representing agencies on various bonding issues. This division also represents the Commerce Department in cases involving licenses and practices in many industries, particularly in real estate, securities, insurance, and building contractors. This division protects the state's interests in intellectual property and contract enforcement. Next, the Charities Division. The Charities Division oversees and regulates charities in the state of Minnesota, including charitable trusts and nonprofits active in Minnesota, particularly related to fundraising. The Civil Division. The Civil Division enforces the state's consumer protection and deceptive practices and false advertising laws. The Consumer Services Division also helps individuals and businesses with consumer complaints and consumer enforcement. These are analysts and mediators who answer the calls, the letters, the emails from constituents. And I can tell you that I'd love to take you to a field trip one day. There's a room full of energetic people answering calls. Nobody's call goes for more than about 5 seconds, and they're just doing all they can to help solve people's problems that arise every day. The Medicaid Fraud Division investigates and prosecutes civil and criminal cases against Medicaid vendors who have committed fraud. This division also prosecutes financial exploitation cases and False Claims Act cases. We have substantial support from the federal government to support that work. The Public Safety Division handles thousands of implied consent and other driver's license related matters in court each year. We have people running around the state showing up regarding what we call ICs, implied consents, and that's part of the important work that we do in this division. This division also represents Department of Public Safety, Driver and Vehicle Services, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Minnesota State Patrol, Capital Security, among others. It also provides DWI training for law enforcement and agencies throughout the state. The Residential Utilities and Antitrust Division, very important, investigates and enforces state and federal law around price fixing, bid rigging, monopolization, and mergers and acquisitions. It also advocates for residential and small business consumers around rates and reliability of gas, electric, telephone utility service, and also takes enforcement action against utilities if they violate state consumer laws. Finally, let me tell you about the Trials and Appeals Division, which helps attorneys with the prosecution of serious, violent, and civil commitment of sex offenders. This division also handles felony appeals for 80 of Minnesota's 87 counties, and they also help train law enforcement, and county attorney staff. In addition to these divisions, there are several other very hardworking divisions that do wonderful work. Let me just note them because they deserve it. The Environmental and Natural Resources Division, Human Services Division, Occupational Licensing Division, Schools and Higher Education Division, Solicitor General Division, State Agencies Division, Tax Division, Transportation Division, all of them working for the people of the state of Minnesota. Now, the Attorney General's Office is a net contributor to the state. In recent years, the office has saved the state and or returned state to state coffers hundreds of millions of dollars. In fact, the resources of the Office of the Attorney General brings in for Minnesota far exceed our biennial appropriation. The Office of the Attorney General also puts dollars directly back in the pockets of people and businesses, regular citizens. In just six large cases that were settled last year, the Office of the Attorney General got back about $102 million from Minnesota consumers and businesses. This is just regular people who are constituents who we fought for and helped. I also want to highlight the work of folks in our Consumer Services Division, which I mentioned just a moment ago. For the last 6 months of 2018, they answered more than 35,000 calls. The calls are answered by a live person, and as I noted, the average answer time is within 5 seconds. And I've been at a few meetings where the leader in that division has said it's down to 4 seconds. So we're proud of the work they do, and they take what they do very seriously. The work of this division often goes unrecognized, which is why I want to mention them today. And I want to share with you that the folks who work there with people one-on-one, not in the courts, these folks don't go to court, and they're not really lawyers except for the person who runs the division, saved or returned more than $4.4 million to individuals, Minnesota businesses, and consumers. So now I'd like to share with you what I want to focus on. Of course, we're going to do all the work that we're constitutionally and statutorily required to do, but I do have some priorities I'd like to share with you. First is consumer protection. There are two areas of consumer protection which are particularly important to me, and one of them is drug prices. All of us have heard stories about how the price of insulin has gone up. It's risen about 1,200% in the last 20 years. It's a good example of how people are just having so much difficulty affording their lives. In the course of the last year, I got to meet Nicole Smith Holt, who told me of her son, Alec, who last year, when he turned 26, he aged out of his mother's health insurance. He was a restaurant manager making about $35,000 a year. He couldn't afford insurance on his own at $450 a month. And with a $7,600 deductible, he just was at pretty difficult circumstances. He also was insulin dependent and couldn't afford to pay the $1,300 a month for insulin that was keeping him alive. So Alex started to ration his insulin, and 1 month after he aged off his mother's health insurance, he died of ketoacidosis. There are about 1.25 million Americans with type 1 diabetes that we hope to save from that situation. I support the lawsuit former Attorney General Swanson filed in October against three insulin manufacturers. These manufacturers artificially and deceptively hiked up the list price of their insulin so that they could then negotiate artificially high discounts to get good placement on drug formularies that insurance companies use. Because of this deceptive practice, Minnesotans who are uninsured or underinsured have high deductible insurance, and those lives depend on insulin have ended up paying these artificially high list prices out of their own pockets. And when they couldn't afford to pay those prices out of their own pocket, many of them ended up rationing their insulin like Alan. My next priority I'd like to share with you is wages and wage theft. The Minnesota Attorney General has responsibility to work on wage-related issues with the Commerce Department and the Department of Labor and Industry. And a 2017 report by the Department of Labor and Industry found that more than 38,000 Minnesotans a year lose about $12 million in income because of wage theft. Low-wage workers are the most vulnerable, especially of women and people of color. In 2012, a study from the Economic Policy Institute found that nationally, people lost about $933 million in wage theft alone, just out of their family budgets. This compares to about $341 million lost in property theft. Wage theft is a serious problem, and we take it seriously. Third, I intend to focus on the needs of rural and farm communities. I'm very concerned with making sure that no matter where people live, they know the Attorney General's office is there to protect their rights, and that goes for rural and agricultural communities as well as other parts of our state. And fourth, I intend to focus time and attention and energy with the Department of Human Rights to enforce the Women's Economic Security Act, which the legislature passed in 2014. This is a critical issue for us, and we want to work with you to make sure that we have equal rights for all in our state. So that's my overview, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I'm prepared to discuss matters concerning budget if the committee would like, but that's my presentation for now, and we have questions we'd be happy to respond to.
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General Ellison. I have a question about just how you intend to support Rice County or support county attorneys. I've had a few conversations with our Rice County attorney, and just curious about support you intend to provide there, what you can do from your position.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippert, thanks for that question. Let me tell you, I've had several listening sessions all over the state, and every time we go, whether it's Albert Lea or Duluth or wherever we go, we always have a special breakout with our county attorneys. Understanding that outside of the seven largest counties in the state, that being Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, Washington, Anoka, St. Louis, Olmsted, you know, a lot of our counties really have as many, you know, 8-9 people in them, and some fewer than that. Cook County has like 2, and Rice County has maybe about 5 or 6, I'm not sure exactly, but if there is a big murder or a large criminal enterprise that occurs there, it really does really have a major impact on the ability to deliver justice in the county. So we believe it's our job to step up and be a backup. We've done that. One of the things that you will see in our budget request this year is support for more attorneys who will be devoted to working in greater Minnesota doing criminal work, and all of Minnesota doing economic crimes. But this issue of criminal appeals and being available to step up on a homicide case where homicides happen only rarely is a critical service we provide, and that's one of the things we intend to do. And not to mention representing you know, in the implied consent area, where licensure, of course, that's important for the whole state, and also sex offender representation. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question. I was encouraged to hear you mention your concern about rural communities and farmers in particular. So I serve Northfield, Lonsdale, Montgomery, District 20B. Just yesterday in the Agriculture and Food Committee, we had a testifier raise a concern about possibly a pricing violation in the dairy community. There was a situation where someone's selling milk at retail lower than what may be able to secure that for the wholesale price. I'm just curious if you, and there was some concern that maybe this has been happening somewhat regularly. So I'm wondering if you're first aware of that instance around dairy pricing, and second, how you may be able to support farmers who are going through crisis right now.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippert, you know, we've had a series of conversations with people who are small and moderate-sized farmers, and we're exploring ways we can help them. I recognize that farming is a part of our American legacy, let alone including Minnesota, of course. And so we've got to be there to make sure that the family farm continues to thrive and grow, and yet we know that for so many farmers, they haven't been able to get a price that they need to sustain their farms over the last 3 or 4 years in perhaps any area, except for maybe I've heard pork production is doing okay, but certainly dairy is tough, and several others are struggling as well. I have heard about this issue in terms of price fixing and issues of market concentration and monopolization generally are a real concern. So these are things that have come to our attention. We'd like to work with you, but with on this, these issues, Representative Lippert, but we've certainly represented, met with, and been in continuous contact with several organizations that represent small and moderate farmers who are facing a range of challenges, not just in terms of farming. Some of the challenges they face are in the area of healthcare. Also, telecom is a serious issue for them, too. So there are a number of issues that come together on that family farm that have to do with issues of pricing, market concentration, but also other issues as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's an area of focus and attention.
Let's stay in touch.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our Attorney General, I appreciate your priorities. The one right now that is at the top of my list is the insulin. A group of legislators, as you probably know, have already set in motion a number of bills. And if you have ways that we can get the job done quicker, I would appreciate hearing that from you.
Attorney General.
Certainly, Representative. The Attorney General does have authority to deal with unfair, deceptive trade practices and market concentration. And this is some of the authority we're relying on in the insulin cases that we're pursuing right now. But quite honestly, any work that the state legislature can do to help us deal with these exorbitant prices, we would encourage you to continue to do it. I mean, of course, this is the right body to look at what authority that you might want to confer with the Attorney General, because you'll weigh all of the equities. But I can tell you that we're not talking about, you know, firms that want to make a good product that people need at a fair price. We're talking about exorbitant, galloping prices in some cases, as you've seen, that have really put ordinary people at tremendous risk. And of course, I mentioned Nicole Holt Smith's son, 26 years old. He rationed his insulin, and he lost his life. So this is rightfully a priority that you all have made, and we share it.
Just a comment at a meeting that we had in December, there was somebody that had traveled around the world, and they were able to get insulin like from $18 to $24 in other countries. And ours is in the hundreds and, as you said, thousands.
Attorney General.
There's a problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when insulin was first discovered, it was given to the University of Toronto for free. But they couldn't manufacture it in the quantities that they needed. So they turned to a company, and then that company took some patents, and next thing you know, it's this drug that is incredibly expensive all of a sudden. It's not that there's not enough insulin. It's that there's a restriction on access and pricing. We need to, this is a public concern, and I'm glad you're focused on it.
Thank you.
Representative Mason. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, Attorney General, that I had to step out for a bill hearing, so I missed some of your presentation. But I did want to focus this piece, the last slide here that you talked about with the salaries. And are you concerned about the competitiveness and the and in terms of what that means for our constituents in the state of Minnesota when we need to have your office be competitive to bring in talent and keep talent and better serve Minnesotans in the way we're hearing other folks talk about the needs in their communities?
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, Representative Olson. I'm glad you asked me about that. I came prepared to talk about money a little bit, but I know that this hearing was, we're going to talk about more qualitative issues. But since you asked, I think it is important to do it. First, let me just tell you where our money goes. It's very straightforward. About 83% of our appropriations go to salaries and benefits that support our people. That's what we spend our money on. The rest goes to administrative expenses, which are within reason. The next three slides I want to show you show historical trends in the general fund appropriation for the Attorney General's office. The first of these shows the general fund appropriation to the Attorney General's office has remained flat in real dollars. That's about $22 million for the last 4 years. The general fund appropriation for the Attorney General's office in 2018 is the same as it was in 2004, and that's 20% lower than it was in 2002, as you can see. The next slide shows that the general fund appropriation overall has steadily increased in the last 7 years. The state general fund appropriations have increased by more than 75% in real dollars since 2002, and while the general fund appropriation to the Attorney General's office has decreased about 20%. And finally, in the next slide, you can see those two trends together, which are up there, which takes 2002 as a baseline for both the general fund appropriation to the AG's office and the state general fund appropriation overall. And you can see the 75 to 80% increase in state general fund appropriations against approximately 20% decrease in the Attorney General Appropriations Office. So in the final slide, I just want to draw your attention directly to the question you're raising, which is the consequences of long term, which has to do with competitiveness of the average salary of the Attorney General, of an attorney in the Attorney General's office. The attorneys who work every day to uphold the laws and the legislature, the legislature passes, represent the state agencies and boards, save the taxpayers' money, and fight for the public interest of Minnesota, are earning about 13% less than the average attorney at the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, and 20% less than the average attorney in the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and about 35% less than the average attorney at the U.S. Attorney's Office. And this gap can make it challenging for us to recruit public interest-minded attorneys. Now, let me be very clear, Representative. We got awesome people. And they're kind of a miracle because this is now my fifth week, and every day I show up, they show up eager, anxious, bright-eyed. They are ready to go after it on behalf of the people of the state. They come up with ideas, they're creative, and they are trying to solve problems, but they are trying to do more with less. And the challenges of our state have not gotten less. The litigiousness of our society has not gotten less, and yet their pay has flatlined and in some cases gotten less. So I'm glad you asked me that, because they definitely, that this issue needs to be discussed. So thank you very much.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General, thank you for being here. I don't really understand your chart, so hoping you can help me out. I guess it's not a file number, but on your first graph, not the pie chart, but the first graph, it looks like in 2002, the appropriations to that office, I realize you're new, were almost $27 million. But if you go to the next chart, the spending in 2002 looks like it was probably around less than 13. So, you know, there was a whole lot of money there that apparently wasn't being used, and then that's why the appropriation dropped down. And so I understand those two things, and then if you match those two charts, even though one graph shows expenses going up, the other flat, they do match at $22 million. So that's probably okay there, although I would wonder, you know, why the $27 million back in 2002. Do not expect you to know that right now, but I would like to know where that was. But then on the third chart, it looks like, I'm assuming that this is in millions as well, and this one starts out at $100 million in 2002, and then the graphs go differently, but the numbers don't match up. So it looks like the expenditures are on this one over $170 million, if those are a million. Yeah. Why the discrepancy, and where is that from?
Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, I think I can answer the question about why it drops precipitously in the 2003 and 2004. In 2002, we had a 4.5. We were looking at 2003. We were facing a $4.5 billion deficit with the state, and then then 2 years later, we had a $7.5 billion deficit. So all departments in the state got big cuts, to balance our budget. But I'll let the Attorney General answer.
I'd like to allow Mr. Ray Smith to address these issues that have been raised by the representative. And so, would you like to care to dive in?
Sure. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ray Smith, Director of Finance for the Attorney General's Office. Excuse me. The slide for the Attorney General's appropriation in millions of dollars, Representative Nelson, Chair Nelson is correct. I think during the budget challenges at that time, the Attorney General's budget was cut about 20% during those time periods. To go to your questions about the fifth slide, that's an attempt to put the two numbers, Attorney General appropriation, $22 million, up against state general fund spending that's in the billions of dollars. So what we did was we created an index so that in 2002, both numbers were scaled to be 100, or you can think of it as 100%. And what you're seeing over time is the state general fund spending went up about 75 to 80%, and the Attorney General's office appropriation has declined 20%. And that's in actual dollars, doesn't even account for the effects of inflation, cutting into the purchasing power of what we can spend with the $22 million that's appropriated to us each fiscal year.
Representative Green.
Great. Thank you for that explanation, because what you're telling me then is this last chart is not dollars, it's percentages.
Mr. Smith.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, that makes a little more sense. But then the only other question then is that, and like I said, I don't expect you to know this right now, but you explained the drop, and that's fine, but the spending that year was less than 13. So there was a huge discrepancy, and I was wondering if there wasn't an influx of money, but there was nothing. The Attorney General's office didn't have a place to spend it or didn't need it, and that's why it dropped. That was my question.
Well, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green. So the state general fund spending that you're seeing increasing is overall state budget, all agencies in all areas increased. The Attorney General's spending, our small portion of it, that's the one that dropped from 26, 27 million to 22 million in fiscal year 2002.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Attorney General.
Representative, we're just trying to show, so the first one is in the AGO, this one is in, top one's in millions, this one's in billions. So this one kind of adjusts for both so that there's an apples to apples comparison. And we're just trying to show how, while the state budget's gone up, our budget has flatlined. So we do thank you for your questions.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Attorney General Ellingston, many of your actions bring monetary money back to the state. Are there any others that you're working on that don't, that are more in a relief or obtained through year that you're working on that aren't monetary?
Attorney General.
Chairman, yes, as a matter of fact, nearly every action that we take does involve injunctive relief. And what I mean by that is, if you have a company that is engaging in unfair practice with consumers, we may or may not get money out of them, but we always tell them they have to stop it. And so that is a kind of a standard practice with regard to the way that we operate. Injunctive relief is a feature of nearly every settlement, and certainly it's something we ask for in every trial.
Representative Hewitt.
So that would go along with our governor's statement earlier that we work with businesses to keep them in line. One last question, and just being new to the legislature, General, what can we do as this committee to help you go forward?
Attorney General.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I have shared with you, and it's public, that I have requested support in three areas above our last year's request. One of them is we need more money for lawyers to help greater Minnesota when they have needs that we want to meet. We want to answer them quickly, and we want to be there to back them up when they call. We want to be there to help support the whole state, but particularly greater Minnesota when it comes to economic crime. I think that in so many places, so many county attorneys are working hard every day to just protect the public, that if there's some big scam going on, it just is beyond bandwidth. And they count on us to be there to help. And so we need money to do that. The other thing is we do need money for retention. I mean, Representative Olson raised a critical point. If we want to retain great lawyers, I mean, how much can we ask folks to put off the braces that their kids need, that all the things that everybody wants to have in life just to work in the public interest for our state? I think it is critical that we have some money for retention for some of the attorneys. And I would also say that we have some equipment upgrades that we need. So those things, I would just humbly request that you support those requests. And then in addition to that, to the degree that you are contemplating tools we could use to help make drugs more affordable to people, to the degree that you can help us find tools that will help make sure that hardworking Minnesotans get every single penny that they have earned in wages, those are the kind of things that we need. And then in the meantime and in between time, please tell your constituents. I know every representative here has constituents who call and say, I have a problem. And that doesn't have to do with any partisan consideration. It's just helping your people. Let us be your ally in that. We want to help with you. We want to be there. And we also want to make sure that there's no one in our state who feels that they have no one to turn to if they're the victim of a scam. And that particularly is important for our seniors and everyone.
Thank you.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome to the committee, Attorney General Ellison. You mentioned a couple of areas where there are increased needs for the department, in particular trying to help some of the county attorneys with their criminal needs, also dealing with complex cases like the insulin litigation.
Right.
Are there other trends that you've seen or that the department has seen since you're new to the job, since 2004, that have made made the department's challenges more greater, or you know, have seen increased complexity in the 14 years that the budget's been flat?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Long, thank you for asking that question, because absolutely things have gotten a lot more complicated. Since 2004, we went through a mortgage crisis, which was intensely complicated, involving everything from appraisal fraud to mortgage fraud, all kinds of things. This is in the box of the state attorney general to a large extent, not to mention the opioid crisis. This is, we weren't really talking in terms of opioid crisis in 2004, but now it is a scourge across our state and the nation. And in 2004, we've seen the young women victimized in sex trafficking, and not to mention labor trafficking, which is a serious problem. And so there have been no shortage of complicated things that have that we've seen emerging in terms of trends. Let me also note that in 2008 we talked in terms of subprime mortgages, and when I was a member of the state legislature with Representative Nelson, we talked a lot about subprime and what we were trying to do about it. Well, now it's not just mortgages. There's subprime student loans, subprime credit cards, subprime all types of sort of financial products, which often land people who are on the edge in a much more difficult economic situation. And again, we're talking about people with jobs who work every single day. I think that we ought to be note those trends. But I will also add this, Representative Long. We've gone to our Consumer Services Division, which fields those calls every day, you know, the 35,000 calls in the last 6 months. And we're working with them to help really draw out the trends so that we can be a little bit more ahead of the game. As you know, if you're a financial fraudster, you've ripped off everybody and gone down to the Bahamas before we even know what happened. And so we need to be a little bit more proactive, and so we're really trying to upgrade our abilities there to know how we can be quick and responsive.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Attorney General, for being here. First of all, question. how much are you actually asking for? As long as we got into the money thing, I know it was kind of a summary thing, but what are we looking for?
I'll defer to Mr. Ray Smith on this.
Mr. Smith.
So, Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel, we've submitted to the governor for his consideration and his recommendations to be released later in the month, three change items. One change item is to support rural county attorneys adding staffing in that division. That number is approximately $1 million. The second change item is to bring salaries closer to at least the Ramsey County salaries that we're seeing today for our attorneys. That one's a little over $1 million. And the third item that Attorney General Ellison mentioned related to some IT upgrades to deal with the ever-increasing amount of electronic data that we're seeing in our litigation and purchasing more licenses for specialized software for us to when we represent state agencies and the people of Minnesota in that litigation. And that one's under $500,000 per year.
And we'll, and Mr. Attorney General and Representative Vogel and members, we'll be having more when the budget items come, when we get the budget and we start going through it, we'll be having agencies back here to explain what their changes are and probably more details. It's probably not the time right now to do it because we don't know what the governor is going to recommend yet. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wasn't going to go there, but it kind of went there, and you throw numbers at me, and it's like, so we're talking 10 to 12% increase at least relative to the $22 million that you're getting probably. I'm just throwing out numbers from what I see. The other thing I just wanted to clarify on your chart up there, the 80%, that's in real dollars, right? So the inflation has been taken out. If you had actual dollars, would that be trending up from 2014, or are those real dollars adjusted for inflation so they stay flat? So there have been some increases or not?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel, these numbers are actual dollars. They have not been adjusted for inflation. Using the Consumer Price Index and this sort of baseline of 2002, the purchasing power of our appropriation has been more than cut in half in the decade and a half that we're seeing here.
So there are, thank you, Mr. Chair, actual dollars. The question that I had was, I deal with a lot of small business people. And when you're a small business, if indeed an action is brought against you, especially by a large government office like the Attorneys General, there's a lot of intimidation. And sometimes, and I'm not saying that in a negative way that it's intended, what I'm saying is how the small business owner feels is, now all of a sudden, what am I going to do? And so my question is, how do you in the office respond to that? Because, you know, there are obviously legitimate things that need to be litigated, or but if indeed all of a sudden you have this small business person that has to go out and hire an attorney and may only employ 2, 3, 4 people, how do you take into account and have a discussion about that so that that person is thinking, wow, what am I into? So that you keep it on a low enough keel that if there's something to go after, legitimately they should. But if they're not, you know, some of these people could easily be driven out of business or certainly impeded for their future because all of a sudden they have $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 in legal bills because they're scared. And they never get to the point of not having to, they run to the attorney right away to defend them because they're scared.
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is an excellent question, and we're very sensitive to this. I think it's important to understand that what we often are responding to consumer complaints, and we a lot of our work begins with just inquiries, and we really are not. I view it as our job to build better markets, where information is shared, where people are honest, and where businesses can compete on quality and price. My concern is for that small business person that you're mentioning, because I'm concerned that if you're out there doing things the right way, upholding the ethical standards of your industry, and somebody else is not doing that, and as a result, they're accumulating cash that you don't get because you're doing it the right way, I don't want you to be out-competed because that person's not being, not, there's no cock on the beat for that person. So it's critically important. Many of our complaints will come from other members of the business community. Some of our, a lot of our complaints come from businesses who have been the victims of scams themselves. It's important to remember that businesses are consumers. They buy things all the time. And it's critical. I mean, think about how many businesses that may have been started on a credit card. And so I am very sensitive to the point you raise. Therefore, I think we should proceed gently, particularly when we're dealing with a small business. I understand this, and I want you to know that I get there is a difference between a good faith mistake and a fraud. They're not the same. One may involve, you know, a warning, corrective action, counseling, coaching, whatever, and another one might involve, you know, enforcement action. But I definitely want you to know that I'm sensitive to that. I was a small business person myself. I ran my own law office for many years, had to make a payroll, had to pay investigators, had to pay lawyers who I hired to work for me, and it's not easy. And, you know, when you're dealing with a large entity that can swamp you, it's intimidating, and it makes you feel a little bit of trepidation. So I want you to know that I'm sensitive to that, and but I also I'm also really sensitive to the fact that if you're doing the right thing the right way, you shouldn't have to compete with people who are not.
Representative Vogel. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the reason I brought that up was I was talking to a person a week ago or so that does masonry work, and was doing some masonry work for a small restaurant that was slightly out of compliance on the ADA, and there, and I think you're aware that there was, there's legitimate things, but there was also a few people that were trying to basically scam small businesses, saying, you know, give me $5,000 and maybe I won't pursue this thing. And that kind of what drove the question is, first of all, you can get in trouble sometimes for an inadvertent error that you didn't really mean, and it needs to be talked about. But then secondly, that the AG's office is also looking at those type of things, because they're devastating. If you're at a small cafe down in a small town in greater Minnesota, $5,000 might be, I've seen people's tax returns, $5,000 might be their profit for the year. It might be more than their profit for the year. And I just bring that up, and I don't want to delay things here, but I do think it's something that we need to be aware of as we approach things and help them, as well as sometimes they need to have the strong arm put on them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
In terms of Vogel, I think what I got out of the Attorney General's answer is sort of like what OSHA and OSHA consultation does in that area of safety. Instead of hitting them with the hammer, they try and work with them to fix the problems so that they don't reoccur, and instead of coming down with the both feet like and really going after them, but you go after the people that you need to go after. I think that's what I heard from the Attorney General.
That's right.
Thank you. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the first question is trying to get further clarity from your slides. Understanding, you know, representing a smaller county and then a larger county, that a lot of the attorney staff and all staff are, I guess, not poaching is the word that I've heard used, but the larger counties with the larger budgets grab the more experienced. And to add more illumination to your last slide about salaries, if you could, you know, offline give us the average years of experience for, you give two large counties in the AG's office, and then I don't understand why you would have the U.S. attorneys, because that's a very nationally prestigious stepping stone. You know, former people in those offices are governors or have been governors, senators, you know, our circuit judges, etc. But on to the question about what the Attorney General's office's philosophy is about defending the constitutionality and other challenges to state laws is that you considered part of your, you know, core?
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we view it as our core responsibility to uphold the Constitution and defend the laws of the state of Minnesota.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm heartened by that because the former AG did not come to the aid of three, well, actually, I think it was more counties and some of them got dismissed, where we passed a law. It was implemented, and then several counties were taken to court for the constitutionality of that law. And the end result was they won. The law was constitutional. But those counties incurred hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees, which for many of those counties was a huge portion of their budgets, where if the AG had stepped forward and said, you know, it's a passed and signed law, the constitutionality is being challenged, and local governments shouldn't have to protect the state's statutes when challenged in court. And I'm glad that your office will actually step forward and do what should have been done in the past. And thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the feedback. I would just you know, encourage all members to come see us. Let's sit down and talk. One of my favorite authors said, "If you can face it, you can fix it." So let's. My door. I have an open door policy, and want to make sure that we're working together in a fluid way to help the people of our state. With that, I'll just say that I will make this note. When we pulled out comparable public, we were looking for public law offices. We weren't comparing ourselves to the private sector because they make way more than any of us. So it's public law offices and of somewhat of a comparable size. So that's why we put those offices on the chart. The fact is, you know, I'm happy to respond in terms of our qualifications, but I can assure you, the lawyers at the Minnesota Attorney General's office are extremely well qualified, highly regarded. They're just a little underpaid, and so I'll wrap with that.
And Attorney General, if you can get us if you have that information about years of experience in the comparable offices, if you can get that to us, get it to the committee, and we'll get it to the members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am now officially a senior citizen, and so I am, of course, the target of phone scam after phone scam. I've got one scammer that has called me at least a dozen times. I'm getting constituent complaints because my voicemail box at home is constantly full. They're spoofing their origin phone number, so it's the same recording, but it shows as if it's coming from a dozen different phone numbers.
Right.
And then the other thing that that these guys do in order to mask who they are is, because I've had these kind of complaints and have brought them to the attention of the Attorney General's office, and somebody from the Attorney General's office will call the number that I was told to call, and they get a recording that this number is not in service, because apparently these guys also maintain databases of who they called.
Mm-hmm.
And if you call from a number that's not on their list, they play this recording instead. So I understand that these kinds of things are very difficult and time-consuming to investigate. So clearly it must be possible to reach them because they want me to call and authorize the payment. But are you starting to strategize about how you would get around some of these defenses that they throw up so that we can actually get some of these guys?
Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, you know, absolutely. And let me just reference Representative Long's question about trends. Yep. You know, back in 2004, we weren't talking about big data.
Yeah.
Now we are. This is these entities, they use this data, they build algorithms designed to go after certain people, and we have simply got to keep a step ahead. So yeah, we are strategizing in the office and with other attorneys general across the country to figure out how to do this, because oftentimes they are multi-state. But that's one of the reasons why we need some equipment upgrade as well, because we've got to be able to track these people, compile the information, and we've got to have some way to make sure that we can, you know, not fall too many steps behind them. Because as you know, if they find somebody who actually bites on the scam, that person's going to get a whirlwind of attention, because now they think, oh, we can get that person. And they'll go after you just based on your demographics, your age, if they can figure out through data how much money you may have, and your profession, they will target you. And they can be very clever and actually even scary.
Thank you. Yeah, Attorney General, I've been getting those calls, or have gotten a few of those over the last couple of years. There's a lawsuit against you, and if you don't respond, we're going to come after you, or your income tax, or you didn't pay your income taxes, and we're going to, and this is the IRS, we're coming after you. Those are ones I've been getting on my voicemail. So yeah, it's sometimes those are, and they're very convincing at times when they make those calls. So,
they're good at what they do.
Any further questions we have? If not, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I look forward to hearing your budget requests when it comes through the budget, and. You have a good day.
Thank you, and thank you to all members. Absolutely.
With that, members, the meeting's adjourned.